You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, welcome back. And it's like I told you a little early in the program, you're going to meet a couple of people today that are actually contracted to do jobs for the council. As you know, the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is tasked to do a lot of things because of its semi-autonomous, you know, government agency to do with research and fishing and limits. And that all takes a lot of science. And that's where our guests come in today. They are a research group. And they are a Hawaii-based research group. And we're going to learn all about them because we're going to learn not only what they are, but in our next show, we're going to learn a bit about a specific project. But just to get to know Poseidon Fisheries a little bit, we want to reintroduce you to a couple of folks that have been here before, but they're in a slightly different capacity. But for the last year or so, they've been working together. First is Cassandra, we call her Cassie Pardee, and she is, along with John Wiley, the managing partners of a company called Poseidon Fisheries. And I just, there's something about the word Poseidon that I really, really like. For those that don't know, Cassie, where does Poseidon come from?
He was a god of the ocean. Yeah. And so when we were trying to figure out names, we were thinking something powerful. And
yeah, that is powerful. I love, do you remember the, what was it called? The Poseidon Adventure or something like that? In other words, it's a very respected word. In a nutshell, what brought the whole thing together? What was the concept of why did you create this entity?
Well, the council, like you said, has a lot of jobs that need to be filled and a lot of science that needs to get done. And John and I were both working independently for them. And so we decided it would be easier if we came together and formed this company so we could get more contracts and be of more use to the council.
Yeah, it's kind of strength breeds strength, right? I mean, if you get together and do stuff like that. But obviously, I'm guessing that what you're doing is a moving target, that you keep changing and osmosing. How does it blend in now? So if there's a contract that the council is going to let out, you get to bid on it and apply for, I guess, just sustained work.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, our projects change from year to year. We just finished a Kona crab project, and now we're moving on to a coral reef project. Mm-hmm. So a lot of different projects. And because we are now a company, we can bid for projects from the council and also government contracts.
Yeah, which really expands the horizons. For those that don't know, Cassie, what's your own background? What got you interested in science and in the fisheries specifically?
So before coming out to Hawaii, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Philippines, and I worked with coastal resource management with Filipino fishermen. And so that really piqued my interest in working with local fishermen and learning about the science of local fisheries.
What I think is fascinating, maybe see if you agree, it seems that the folks in the Philippines are maybe a little more resourceful than we are. They use everything. I mean, it truly is. Isn't it an amazing thing? And yet one has to ask, as a scientist, are they making some strides now in maintaining or improving sort of the devastation that there used to be to some of the products and some of the reefs and like that?
It just depends on the region. I mean, it's really hard to talk about conservation when you're living from one
plate to plate, right? Yeah, really.
But yeah, they are very resourceful. I knew a lot of fishermen who would go spearing, but they didn't have goggles, so they made wooden goggles for themselves.
Amazing, huh? Yeah.
And yeah, so
I actually have a pair of those hanging up in my office at home.
Me too.
Yeah, it's really cool. They're bamboo, and they have a little place where they glued on some glass and a little string. Usually the band was made from a tire inner tube. That's where the elastic came from. But it seemed to work.
Yeah, the string that they had on mine was fishing string. But they made it for a Filipino face, and I have a very big American nose, so it doesn't really fit my face.
Yeah, so it leaks a little bit. But that being said, how long did you spend there, just out of curiosity?
2.5 years.
Wow, that's great. And how did this meeting and with John come up? First of all, we'll jump over to John. Same kind of a background, John. Where did you start and what brought you here?
So I got my undergrad in biology from Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo.
Yep.
And then kind of looking to see what I wanted to do after that, I got to go out to South Africa for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I was an intern out there and then a field specialist.
That like is a big leap of faith from, yeah, from the U.S. to South Africa, right?
Yeah.
It's funny
because I was kind of looking for an adventure too, so I kind of solved both things.
Yeah.
And it really submersed me into like the science projects that they had. Yeah. We got to look at white shark population dynamics and benthic shark species and cetacean movements.
Isn't that interesting, South Africa? I mean, it's so far removed from Hawaii. I happen to know my wife is a Brit. She's American now, but she was actually born in South Africa. Her father was in the consular corps there a long, long time ago when she was born. But it's amazingly like Hawaii, particularly the surf and stuff.
Yeah, people are all about being in the water.
How'd you get there? How'd you get there, man?
There was just an opportunity that was getting passed around. Mm-hmm. My advisor told me about it, and I applied, and it just worked out for me to get to go.
I'm guessing maybe, and you can both answer this, but I'll start with you since we're talking already, is that a lot of the young people that you guys are now sort of mentoring is kind of what you were not that long ago, right?
Yeah.
Can you relate to that, what they're going through?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of the first time where you really feel like, yeah, I was just there. Yeah. So I really understand what they're going through.
Well, it sounds to me, Cassie, like what you said a while ago, given this opportunity to expand and apply for other stuff, that means that by osmosis, you're going to create associates and opportunities for others to work with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, currently, right now, we are looking for undergrad or grad students to be interns with us to help us with this.
Now, listen, pay attention, mom or dad. You got a kid to this. And by the way, we've done this many, many times. Over the years, this program is for just because of its reach into the fishing community and the wannabe fishing community. There's always some opportunity there. So when you say an internship, there's all kinds of different ones. Are we talking summer, extended? What kind of things you might have?
It's an extended internship. It would be coming with us to the fish markets to survey reef fish and then also going into the lab to dissect the fish and look at how to age coral reef fish.
That's really interesting. And I'm guessing, John, that a lot of people think it's like a tree. You just cut it and count the rings and there you go.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more work to get there.
How do you get the ear?
Yeah,
How do you get that ear bone out of there, and then how do you read it?
So you cut it out of the fish as carefully as you can.
Yeah,
they're
little,
brittle,
aren't they? And brittle,
very small, especially in small species. So you cut out the ear bone. It's called an otolith, and then you grind it down. We have like a jewel grinder type thing. So you grind it down to it's really flat.
Yeah,
and you get a cross section of it. And then once you get it down there, you can look under a microscope, and you can count the growth rings like a tree.
How about the first guy that discovered that? You know, I mean, you guys just do it now, right?
Yeah,
because it is what it is.
Yeah,
but I wonder who thought that first. Cassie, who said the first time, okay, I think I'll cut into this fish. I'll find this. Gee, that looks like an ear, kind of. That must be an ear. Maybe it's like the rings of a tree.
Yeah, I don't know who started it, but in colder places, the rings are very, very easy to read.
Oh,
so it's
right?
really nice rings. Mm-hmm. Here in the temperate areas, or tropical areas, you can't really see the rings as well. So it takes a little bit more focus to get to the rings.
But, you know, something you said a while ago I think is pertinent. And that is, it's hard to say conserve something when somebody's living from the tip of their spear to their plate. But I'm wondering if people even stop to consider how long do reef fish live? You know, are they little babies and we get them right away, or are they old ones? So, John, when you talk about that, specifically when you're looking at this little tiny thing that you've taken out of the ear of the fish, are you surprised at how old some of these things are?
Yeah, especially a lot of the reef species can be pretty old. I mean,
how old?
Like you look at uhu species, maybe they can get up to 20 years old or so.
That's amazing. Yeah. It really is, you know.
So it's definitely an important consideration, especially for management, to see how long they can live and how long it takes them to reproduce.
What I consider interesting is I do know in the billfish business, not just in the fishing of the taking of the billfish, but even in just taking a look at it, they can determine which are in their best breeding, and don't take those. Take the really big ones or something. So I mean, but yet we're pretty indiscriminate, aren't we? If we're reef fishing with a spear or with a net, we're going to take them all.
I mean, you can spear fishing. You can be pretty
selective.
A little
selective, right?
Yeah. So that's always a plus. But yeah, sometimes the really big fish are very well, like the eggs are much better at being hardy and having a lot more offspring, and they can actually produce exponentially more eggs than
and you know it, you just don't I guess see it, and there's pros and cons of this, and I know Cassie, this may not have much to do with what you're doing, but right now there's been pretty much of a shutdown on Oahu and on the Big Island of aquarium fishing. You know, I mean, for once, whatever the reasons. But that seems to be that they're saying that it's prolific and that it's easier to define. Are those also old? Can those little aquarium fish be old?
We're not really quite sure.
Yeah.
A lot of the reason that we're doing this study is because we don't know how old a lot of the fish get, especially here in Hawaii. There have been some aging of fish in Australia, but Australia fish are very different than Hawaii fish.
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing this, to find out how old these different fish get.
Well, there's also, John, reef fish and reef fish, right? There's the desired species that we want to eat, and then there's an ornamental. And I don't think anybody consciously goes out and looks for butterfly fish to eat. They might catch them in their net and, I guess, eat them because they're there, but it's certainly not sought after. Incidentally, I don't know if either one of you saw this, and I hate to shock anybody, but I looked at something in Civil Beat the other day that would indicate that just in the North Shore of Kauai, since the storms, there's a lot fewer people there, you know, on the beach, a lot fewer tourists there. And there are actually some locals that are saying that the fish population seems to be coming back in and coming a little bit. Can something like that? And you're both shaking your heads. If this were TV, you could see them kind of nodding in agreement. Can that affect the fishery? Just no, all of a sudden, from a whole 2,000 people a day in the water to none.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if all of a sudden nobody's there anymore, the fish can start coming back in.
They're afraid of us, right?
Yeah, especially if they know that you're going to spear them.
I should say. You know, watch out for that big guy with the spear gun. The other guy's all right. But it is sort of, I guess, if that's a benefit. And then another thing, and even though this is really off the script, because I do want to talk about this intern abilities, and later on, we're going to do this again next week, and we're going to talk with Cassie and John about this Kona Crab Project, which is really exciting. But I think that it also speaks to that, you know, when we look at what is out there and what isn't out there, particularly like if you look at the lava flow, and I grew up, this is kind of a long question, I grew up on the Big Island, and I went to Kapoho and the tide pools there as a little kid. And the fascinating part about that, you go from tidewater to no bottom in like no time. It gets extremely deep right away. Isn't it amazing what's happening there? And how do you guys want to get there, John, to look and see what populations are coming around this new lava once it's cooled down enough so they can get near it?
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a great opportunity to see how things come in and see that speciation of new species coming in and the diversity and really settling down in an area.
They say it's going to take decades before there's growth or, you know, reef or habitat there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But it is truly amazing the way it's gone off that. Okay, I want to get back, though, to the to this entire concept of the Poseidon effect that you're doing here. So it came up, and what you want to try to do, I guess, is position yourself in some of the things that the council does. Can you give, we're not going to talk about the Kona Crab till next week. Can you tell us specifically what some of those projects might be?
So we just finished the Kona Crab project, which we'll talk about next week.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting a new biosampling project here on Oahu.
Which is
where we go to the markets and look at the different reef fish and measure and weigh them, because that information doesn't really show up in the commercial reports.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to be purchasing fish from the markets to age them, so we can get an idea of how old they get and when they reproduce. So right now we're looking at the Polani and the different surgeon fish.
Yeah, so what we call rubbish fish, the dark meat, although for certain parts of this they're anything but rubbish fish. Isn't it sort of interesting? They look sort of plain and drab, but they're all... they're reflective of different tastes. They don't all taste the same for some reason.
Yeah, I haven't had an opportunity yet, but I've decided I will have many fish in the future, so I will come back with...
When we do that now, obviously, some must come to call. When I was a kid, nobody had ever heard of any sickness or anything like ciguatera. I mean, it just wasn't talked about. And of course now, you know, whether we cause it or it's natural, does that have any play in the kind of fish that you're buying at a market, and is there regular testing done to see if they're tainted with something like that?
I know there are some tests available. I can't really speak to their accuracy, but typically when you have a large predatory fish, you have a higher chance of ciguatera.
Yeah,
as it eats other things and it kind of bioaccumulates up the
Like kahala, for instance. They might, you know, and but interestingly enough, And I don't know if either one of you, Cassie, I'll ask you this first. I don't know if either one of you have experienced that, but it must be fascinating that, you know, you can have, like where you came from in the Philippines, people eat that fish that's hot all the time, but they seem to build up either some kind of immunity or it's not as problematic there. Here, people get sick with ciguatera, they get pretty sick.
Yeah, I came from a very small community in the Philippines, so it might not have been such an issue there just because the pollution is probably not as bad as areas around Manila or other areas where the ciguatera could be more potent.
It is sort of interesting. Anyway, but getting back to that, John, obviously you guys with great thought formed your entity so that you could be able to present, I guess, options. So when you compete, instead of now being assigned something as a council person, mm-hmm. now you are competing with others for a job, which is usually research?
Yeah. So we're going after like federally funded grants mm-hmm. or anything else we hear about that we.
Isn't it kind of interesting the way that they come together? How do you find out about grants?
A lot of searching online.
Is that right?
Yeah. Or some through people's networks. They'll send you out things when they hear mm-hmm. opportunities for you.
Well, I would imagine, particularly if you take care of me, I take care of you.
Yeah.
If absolutely. I've got a boat, but you're the expert, we got to work together on that job, right?
Yeah. And once you build that network, it's easier and easier as you go.
What sort of gun, Cassie, are you under when you get one of these things? I would imagine most of them have some sort of criteria where you've got to start and finish and get this to us by such and such a time.
Yeah, so we recently just applied for a government grant, mm-hmm. and it's like a very long process, and you have to have very specific forms about how you're going to spend the money and when you're going to do everything. So it's very, very organized, I guess.
I've heard in some respects, and this is in the larger governmental job opportunities rather than the specific that we're talking about, that the more dots the I's and cross the T's there are, the more specifically controlled you are by the entity that's giving you the money. In other words, it's not like, okay, we believe in what you guys can do, just go out and go count these things and let us know how many there are. Are they pretty specific?
Yeah, they like you to tell them exactly how you're going to spend their money.
Yeah, and you know, in many respects, that's sure, a good idea.
Yeah.
But it does put, isn't that the kind of thing that you take somebody new like Poseidon Fisheries Research, like you guys are, and say, okay, we're in order to get that grant, we have to operate with this deadline. That means we need some help. We need some more people. So this is what these opportunities are for.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's definitely room to grow as we're just kind of starting out here. Yeah. So if we
What's the pool, Cassie? Where are potential associates and interns and the types of places you're going to search? Where do these people exist?
Well, right now for interns, we're looking at HPL mm-hmm. and UH for undergrads or grad students who need a potential practicum project. And then we're eventually, once we get started on this project a little bit more, we're going to be going out with the fishing community looking for help getting the different species that we need.
Yeah. I can tell you one thing, and we know this just from the last few weeks when we've been talking about the Deep 7 research, and that a lot of the fishermen, the guys like Ed Watamora and Roy Morioka and all of these other guys will actually be paid to go out and fish. And for the research part of it. Now, that's where the expertise is, right? So that's, I guess, there's going to be times that you need the same kind of expertise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to be reaching out to different spear clubs and different fishermen who are really good at spearing to get us the different size classes that we need for the species that we're targeting.
I'm hoping that some of this shows up on WPCouncil.org, that you can, you know, do some searching for opportunities. Because I think, John, and maybe we should really compliment the council on the fact that they understand the necessity of branching out and getting relationships going with other either nonprofits or for-profits or for whatever to get the job done.
Yeah, they certainly have helped us quite a bit to build this local capacity, and I think that's one of their big goals to really have people on island who can do the work and who are interested.
Even though we're going to talk about it next week, did the Kona Crab project that we're going to talk about next time were there some pretty neat things to learn there, some secrets that you guys figured out?
I don't know. Should we give it all away?
No. We're going to have to do that next week.
There's some very interesting things and some new things to science, actually.
But, you know, there's a couple of things. And I guess it's the popularity of the Kona crab. And we'll even take other fish like nabeta that you never see in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they're highly sought after. And yet I don't think that we really know the Kona crab the inshore guys have no clue about Kona crab, right?
Yeah, we were working with a very specific group of Kona crab fishermen, yeah. So it was really interesting to learn what they
knew. How did that particular project come about, even though we're going to talk about it later? What turned it? Was just the necessity of knowing it for economic or biological? What reasons?
Yeah, so there was a assessment done, was it 2011? Mm-hmm. And so part of that model that they used for the stock assessment was using some data that was done in Australia, mm-hmm. looking at the post-release mortality of Kona crabs.
Wow.
So yeah. They found that when the crabs were injured, they had a 60 to 100% chance of dying based on those injuries.
Okay, now what you're saying is, when we get into that, you know, what we're saying is when you bring them up, you probably ought to be using them because...
Well, the thing is, the regulations right now, you have to throw back about 80%.
Yeah,
because you can't keep the females. And you have to be 4-inch carapace length for the males. So that's
There be an opportunity, and without giving out a secret once again, that's okay, we can tell some secrets. would there be an opportunity to develop equipment and stuff that will be more easily recognizing what you've got when they're still on the bottom instead of when you're on the boat?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, down the road, you know, who knows, right?
We used some cameras to look at what's going on right on the trap, so that was kind of exciting to see the predator interactions and the crabs coming.
You know, one of the things that I think is important is maybe I want to go to the HPU level because it seems to me that it must be very gratifying to you guys now that you're the grown-ups, you know, is taking a look at some of these young people and what motivated them and how you actually have to promise them, okay, if you stick to what you're doing and you learn this, you could end up doing what we're doing, or who knows?
Well, it's really exciting because we both graduated from HPU with our master's. So it's exciting going back, and we actually, our lab is at the HPU campus. Mm-hmm. So it's fun, being the grown-ups and looking at people's resumes and helping them along and being the ones to be the mentors finally.
The reason I say that is because I do know that sometimes it takes universities or colleges or whatever a long time to gain credibility in the marketplace. You know, and by cranking out, you know, people like yourselves who then start another company, give you more opportunity, that must mean that, you know, sometimes a parent will say to a kid, you want to do what? I want you to do this, or I want you to, you want to do what? Well, aren't there going to be, I guess, John, some pretty cool opportunities if you take your classes seriously and you apply yourself? Coming out of HPU is going to be like, wow, this guy or this gal went to HPU, let's hire him.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Especially with us and the opportunities that we were given with the council, they really reached out to HPU students.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that we were successful and can continue that certainly.
You know, it's interesting to me because through my affiliation with the council and the fact that they've been sponsoring, you know, part of our Go Fish program for so many years now, is that I've seen people as they age out, I've seen, you know, retiring. Dear friend, Dr. Paul Dalzell, the senior scientist, just retired. Mm-hmm. And that means that theoretically there's an opportunity. And that means when a door opens, another closes, or one closes, another opens. That being said, how do you encourage people to do, Cassie, what you did? You went far away from home. Far away from home to learn your trade.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about opportunities, I think, and who you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we were really lucky to get in with the council and learn about all of the council projects. And I got to meet a lot of different people within Hawaii, like people from DAR and people from NOAA.
Yeah.
And it's all about making those connections with fishermen and other scientists so that when opportunities arise, you can use those connections to help.
Yeah, and you know, that's very good what she said, John, because just in that one sense, when you talk with NOAA and DAR, you're talking about a statute, not a statute of limitations, but a line of demarcation. This is council, this is state. Mm-hmm. But the fish doesn't really know exactly what side of the line they're on any given day, do they? So was there in the research, particularly for those that don't know, when we get into this next time, Kona crab is found in what sort of depth?
Usually we're fishing about 15 fathoms or so.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, you know, really doable for a lot of areas.
Yeah.
So they're inside.
The more like commercial guys were going deeper than that.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty interesting stuff. What do you have as far as a presence? If somebody listens to the program today, wants to know a little bit more about Poseidon Fisheries Research, you guys developing a web. Do you have a presence? Can people go look and see what you're doing?
Yeah, we have a website right now. It's PoseidonFisheriesResearch.org.
Okay.
We put together a video of all of our highlights from the Kona Crab Project. Mm. So all of the trap interactions, you see all kinds of sharks and rays coming around on the crabs. So
incidentally, that really, we'll tell them specifically about that YouTube thing in a minute. But also, I mean, it seems to me, and I did a big show about this a couple weeks back, every year, I think this was just number 30th of Shark Week. There's this massive fascination with these animals, right? And as a matter of fact, my column this month in Hawaii Boats and Yachts is about sharks. And I have some huge great whites that are like with their mouth open big enough to take in a car. Isn't it sort of fascinating that that sort of a thing piques the interest of a lot of young people into looking into the fishery?
Yeah, I mean, that's why John got into
Is that right?
Marine science. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It really drew me into the ocean, and just everything you keep learning about it just was more and more interesting.
We have a saying on the guys that I fish with. This one guy always turns around and cocks his head a certain way and says, "We need a bigger boat," you know, because that's kind of what it is. But isn't it, to me, it's fascinating because another program I do talks about the number of people that are interested in forensics now in police shows because of all the CSIs and all of the stuff. But isn't this sort of the same? Thank goodness there are Discovery channels and National Geographic channels and whatnot that really show an expanded version of what some of the things you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think it's a great platform for people that especially may not ever been to the ocean or the beach or anything to see what's actually going on in the oceans and have that opportunity.
When I want to go back to make people understand that it's like the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is like a deck of cards. We shuffle them up and we deal them. And then you guys are out dealing with the different folks. I guess, Cassie, what you said is this time you had to deal with DAR and with NOAA, with everybody on the Kona Crab Project because there's overlap.
Yeah. So we were working with people from DAR. We were working with scientists from NOAA. Mm. We were working with different fishermen. So it's really a good opportunity for us to meet different people in the community and learn different things from everybody. So now that we're doing this coral reef fish project, we're working with different markets. So we're going to different market areas and meeting those people. Hopefully soon we'll be working with fishermen. So it's all about network weaving and getting all these different people.
And what you said, and I think this is important because we started to talk about it and then I wandered. When you start talking about reef fish, John, the reason they don't show up at the auction is because of quantity that you would need to, you know, to have them an auction item all the time. And the fact that some of the time, some of the way they're handled doesn't make the criteria of the auction. You know, if it's particularly if they're speared, if they've been on a float for 3 hours before you get them on ice. Aren't there a lot of secrets to that, to the reef fish business as to how do these things get from the ocean to the plate?
Yeah, a lot of fishermen just sell directly to the vendors,
right?
Just small operations. And then it's, like Cassie said, it's really interesting talking to these guys in the markets because they see everyone's catch and they see it all year. So he was telling us about patterns and size and
which is extremely valuable, right?
Yeah, so we're really hopeful that we can capture that in the data that we're collecting.
How do you prefer to capture it? I mean, obviously you have spreadsheets and all of that, but obviously with today's technology, with cameras and video, you can do a lot more of actual documenting things.
Yeah, we actually have some pretty cool equipment measuring fish.
Yeah.
We have an electronic fish board, so you can put the fish on the board and just has a magnetic wand. So you swipe the wand at the fork length, and it just beeps, and it's saved into the fish board, and you can download it onto your computer.
I've got to go to our friends every other week or so. We have these guys from Wicked Tuna on the show, and they have to measure by eyeball. When they're getting a bluefin, it has to be bigger than 73 inches, right? Otherwise, you got to set it free. And yet they seem to know before they gaff it almost exactly how long it is. So they need this equipment, right, just to make sure they don't, you know, take the wrong fish.
I mean, it's always helpful, but when you've been doing it that long, sometimes
they are. And that's one of the reasons why I guess so many of us here in Hawaii can really sort of relate to that. Okay, before we wrap up for this week, I want to make sure people understand again, Cassie, that you guys, you and John, formed this Poseidon Fisheries Research Group, LLC, right?
Yes.
And once again, the website is?
PoseidonFisheries.org.
Poseidon Fisheries Research.
Research.org.
Poseidon Fisheries Research.
Yeah. And so look, This may be a pebble in the pond. This particular episode and next week's will both be identifiable and playable off the web. We're usually a few weeks behind it, but you can get, it'll be under this, depending on what day of the week you're listening, it's either going to be the 11th or the 12th, but probably the 11th. And hopefully you can learn a little bit more, because I think that maybe, just as our parting thoughts before we go, at what point in time do young people sort of make the decision? Oh, wait, let's start with you, John, because you decided, you know, you just fell in love with the ocean. But you had to, at one point in time, decide your curriculum, decide which direction you're going in. When did you do that?
I mean, it kind of progresses as you go. You don't, mm-hmm. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I knew I liked the ocean, and I mm-hmm. knew I liked science and biology, so that yeah. kind of got me through college. And then you need some outside experiences yeah. to really test, have that experience in the field that you're thinking of to see if you actually like it.
Have you changed direction at any one of those points? Did you start off doing something, I don't want to do this, I'm going to do that?
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Like cognitively, but yeah, yeah. it's just kind of as that the opportunities have arisen, I've gotten more and more into fisheries, yeah. and mm-hmm. I think that's
what I'm impressed with. And Cassie, I think I said this the last time we met. Not only at the vision that the council has to sponsor shows like this and a lot of the things that like you all do, is that somebody somewhere, I must have had to say, you know what, we're going to create an opportunity here in order to do what we need to do. We need to encourage a whole lot of people to come in and be a part of this thing. That's what's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the council gave us both our opportunities yeah. to get through grad school and yeah. get a good project, and has been helping us with different work opportunities since. So,
when was the last time you got to get on a big airplane and go all far away?
I got to go to a conference in Australia.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Aging bottom fish. So that was cool.
That's really cool. That probably could come in big help here. And by the way, isn't it sort of funny? Because on the West Coast, I think they call it ground fish. You know, yeah. instead of, we call it bottom
the
fish.
Rock fish.
And they call it either reef fish or rock fish themselves, don't they, in Australia?
I'm not sure about Australia. Yeah.
Do you remember?
It was like a snapper conference, so they were just calling them snappers.
Snapper conference, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. Okay, that's going to wind it up for this time. And like I said earlier in the program, this is part one of two. So Cassie Pardee and John Wiley will rejoin us again next week. In the meantime, thanks for and great support for the HIBT. Expected that of you. And if you want to hear something on the program, you know what to do. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Have a great time. We'll see you next time for Go Fish.